Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 28, The Norse Myths, Part 6. When it comes to sources for the Norse myths, we are extremely fortunate. In the 20th century, three very great books arose, one in the 1940s, actually in the 1920s, and then was republished in the 40s. So that was the first third of the 20th century. Another one in the second third of the 20th century, circa 1950s, early 60s. And then the last one in the last third of the 20th century. Each one is quite wonderful in and of itself. And if you can just find one of these and work with the way in which the stories are told, even get a feeling for the style in which they are written, no problem whatsoever. If you really want to immerse yourself this summer in the Norse myths and have a lot of time, then it would be great if you could get all three books and see which one suits you best, or draw on elements from the three. So here they are. The oldest one, The Children of Odin, The Book of Northern Myths, by Padraic Colum. That's Padraic, Colum. You may know him from grade 2 if you chose to tell the book, The King of Ireland's Son, which Padraic Colum also retold from older Irish stories. So that's the first third of the 20th century. And then the most famous, the one that is used most widely by Waldorf teachers, is Norse Gods and Giants, which is a large format picture book, though with plenty of good narration. And that's by Ingrid and Edgar Parandolier. Notice all these writers have strange names. At least you don't have to go to Snorri Sturluson for your resources. And that's Ingrid, Ingrid. She was Norwegian. Edgar, Edgar. He was Italian, and that's where their last name comes from, Dolier, D'Aulaire, Norse Gods and Giants. And then lastly, the more recent of the three, The Norse Myths, Introduced and Retold by Kevin Crosley Holland, and that's K-E-V-I-N, Crosley-Holland. Of the three, though Crosley Holland is himself a poet, but the most poetic of the three is the first one, the Padraic Colum. Just a very, very beautiful, delicate style. And the illustrations by Willie Pogani, who also illustrated The King of Ireland's Son, they give a very different quality, very different feeling to these myths. They also have, like the poetic style of Colum himself, a kind of delicacy and refinement to them. The most lively and the most colorful and the most earthy, really, of the three are the Dolier's version, done in a method meant to approximate woodcut with color. And there again, for the illustrations alone, they have so much potential to be great blackboard drawings, and their style is sketchy enough and sort of childlike enough that most Waldorf teachers find it possible to adapt it to the blackboard. And the children, if you so choose, you know, you can show them the book, and they may want to go straight to the source and try to recreate some of the illustrations that are there as well. And they do an excellent job of narrating all of the stories. The most scholarly of the three is the last one, the Kevin Crosley Holland book. And this is in the Pantheon series, the Pantheon Fairy Tale and Folklore Library, which is the most venerable, the most respected. So you can count on his scholarship being accurate. He gives you, as a teacher, a lot of background, where he drew his own inspiration. And he has retold these, but also translated them himself from the original. So it's quite an impressive work, beautifully done. The illustrative material is the most minimal of the three. It really lives in the stories themselves. And if you choose to work with Crosley Holland's versions, you're going to have to do some censorship, because the stories in their original form, we'll see why this is the case, are often quite ribald and even kind of raunchy in some cases. They are pretty open about a whole range of human processes. The Dolières and Patria Column, coming earlier in the 20th century, tend to be more circumspect about all of that. But it's not a bad thing to see in Crosley Holland's version what the originals really were like and the kind of openness of our forebears to the processes that fascinated them no end of their own bodies. It's interesting, this comes at a time when the fourth graders also start to awaken to this. And I don't recall if I mentioned this earlier in my discussion of them, but fourth grade is a time when gender issues really arise. It's not just the boys versus the girls, though there's plenty of that, but it's also the boys trying to figure out if they are fully boys. The girls, the same thing. It's really an important time. And the Norse myths, in a way, speak to this very powerfully about the relationship of the genders. Or in a figure like Loki, one still has a kind of androgyny, which is also there in the healthy fourth grader. Not to be confused necessarily with confusion about gender, and not necessarily to be confused about a child feeling, you know, I look like a boy, but I'm really a girl, or vice versa. And this is a tendency to jump on this sort of thing these days, and will increasingly be so. It's not going away for some time to come. So the stories, especially Crosley Holland's more true-to-sources version of them, definitely will have aspects of that in them. Another aspect of this may be illuminated by, for a moment, looking at the names of some of the gods. We find among them Odin, Frigg, Tyr, Hod, Vali, Gerd, Frey, Sif, Thor, Modi, Ul. All of those are gods with four-letter names. It's not unusual among the Norse to find words of four letters, and certainly words that are monosyllabic. And yes, fourth grade may be the first time that you find not just one or two children in the class who can't contain themselves, but whole numbers of children out at recess time when they don't think a teacher is nearby within earshot, or even when a teacher is within earshot and they know it. This is the golden age, or perhaps we could call it the leaden age, of four-letter words. This is where you're going to start to hear expletives that will continue to sound through the hallways for the next 5 years as you go all the way up to eighth grade. And this is where it begins, and it's very interesting. So it's not to say, let it go, it's fine, it's perfectly Norse, but rather just to be aware that something that lived in the Norsemen, that lived in these myths, is coming into being. The word myth itself, M-Y-T-H, four letters. We have words like love, hate, good, bad, joy, sorrow, the directions, the four directions, though they're not all four letters, but they also have that monosyllabic strength, that power. The quality of people who can't waste words because it's simply too cold outside. They're breathing in a lot and don't have the energy or the breath to wax poetic like their Italian neighbors to the south, or the Spanish or French, but rather there is a laconic rather than loquacious quality to them. And it's good to show the children at some point, especially when you're, for example, learning geography, how many words apply to geography, weather, to the very basic things in life are four letters or one syllable, and how many of them actually can be traced back to the times when the Norsemen made their way to our forebears, at least linguistically speaking, to Northern England, Northern Ireland, and began even to alter the language of those people. So that's something else that comes through. And I would say that Crosley Holland probably captures this laconic quality best. The Dolliers capture the life fill, the brimming over with life quality of the powerful etheric forces and the no less powerful in-streaming astral forces, especially in their illustrations. And then we get Colum's book, which gives us the quality of inwardness, this breathing in, this contraction that was also a part of the Norse people. They weren't all warriors. They weren't all Vikings. Many of them led lives not only of peace, but also of tremendous artistry with their wood carving, their stone carving, and later on their work with jewelry. And this is where again and again we have those twisting, braiding motifs that were taken up by the Celts at the same time. So that's what we have for resources. We're very fortunate to be able to use any one of those or draw from all three. And next we'll look at the content that those resources present to us.